A pleasure. And Dr. Lakshin, of course, is speaking from Yerushalayim. We've gone from England to America to, of course, the place where Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah. And Dr. Lakshin, of course, is a longtime friend and teacher for Torah in Motion. Of course, we know him from his days in Toronto, spent many years as professor at York University in Jewish studies. Of course, his books and expertise on Rashbam. He's been living in Israel now, past a minion of years in Israel, I think, and it's a pleasure always to have him. And he'll be speaking about a new topic, Christians and the Book of Maccabees. So mamash combining, which it already is Hanukkah in Israel, and it's December 25th here and there. So vakasha, Dr. Lakshin.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here, and we've already lit candles here in Israel. So happy Hanukkah to everybody who's joined in from Israel, and to the rest of you, almost happy Hanukkah. When I was looking at the flyer, I was touched to see that that today is dedicated to the memory of Grace Weil, Aleha Shalom, whom I knew well, and such an admirable woman. I just saw this a couple of days ago, and I thought to myself, is there any way that I can connect my topic to Mrs. Weil? And I failed in that, but I thought that I would just mention how honored I am to be speaking at a Yom Iyun, the day of study that is in her honor. I'm going to share a screen with you and get going. Everyone can see the screen okay? Good. And I just want to make sure that the going from page to page works for everybody. So I'll just go to the second page here. Yes, that works.
Okay. Works great.
Okay. So before we talk about why the Christians are so interested in the Book of Maccabees, I thought that the reasonable question to ask is, why are the books of the Maccabees not in a Jewish Bible? So many of you will know these texts, the text in the Mishnah that talks about which books are part of the canon and which books are not part of the canon. And the term that is used is a very strange term, and I don't want to spend too much time talking about it, but the term that the Mishnah uses for a book that is part of the biblical canon is a book that is mitameh et hayadayim, that makes the hands impure. Kol kitvei hakodesh mitamim et hayadayim. Any canonical work, any work that is part of the Bible makes your hands impure. What in the world could this mean? The standard explanation that is found in the oldest rabbinic literature is that people used to take their holy books and they put them together with truma, with food that had holiness. And when the mice would come to eat the food, they would also eat the biblical text. So people, the rabbis made a decree that you, when you touch a holy book, your hands become impure as a way of protecting these books. And it's possible that the fact that we hesitate when we're called up for an aliyah to the Torah, we don't actually touch the parchment. We attempt not to touch the parchment. This might be related to this idea, but this is just the language that the classical rabbis use about what does it mean for a book to be part of the canon. And in the Tosefta, one second, sorry. Okay, in the Tosefta, it is written a parallel text to the Mishnah says, Sifrei ben Sirah, V'chol ha-sefarim she-nichtavu mikan ve'elach einan mitamim et hayadayim. The books, or the book of Ben-Sira lived probably about 50 years before the events of the Book of Maccabees, and the rabbis actually quote the Book of Ben-Sira from time to time in the Gemara, and while they didn't consider it canonical, they considered it a good Jewish book that could be quoted. But it's not part of the biblical canon, and so also any book that was written from that point on, Mikan Va'elah, from that point on, are not part of the biblical canon. So, like the simplest reason why the books of the Maccabees are not in the Jewish Bible is that the Jewish Bible has a closing date. There's some wonderful books that have been written in the 20th and the 21st centuries, books of Rabbi Sacks, books of Nechava Leibovitz, books of Erica Brown, whatever you want. But nobody suggests that they become part of the biblical canon because the biblical canon is closed. And so also the classical rabbi said that at a certain point in history, the biblical canon was closed. And any book that was written after that point, whatever its merits, so without getting into any kind of question of the merits of the book, it missed the train, and that's why it's not part of the biblical canon. On the other hand, I don't know how well you can see this slide, but if you look at it really carefully, I photocopied the content page of the Old Testament in the Vulgate Bible that I own. The Vulgate is the Latin Bible that for many years was the official Christian version of the Bible, at least in Western Christianity. And this page says at the top, Ordo Librorum Veteris Testamenti, the order of the books of the Old Testament. And the first thing that it lists is the Pentateuch, which is Genesis, Exodus, etc., and then it goes through the books of the Bible. And the last book in the last column on the right-hand side is Maccabiorum. The books of the Maccabees are there as part of the Christian Old Testament. And well, the whole session today will be about reasons why it doesn't make sense for the books of Maccabees to be part of the Christian Bible, and why, nevertheless, the books of the Maccabees are part of the Christian Bible. Let's just jump forward for a second from classical times, from rabbinic times, to 1940, 9 days after Winston Churchill became the Prime Minister of England, he delivered a speech. You can listen to this speech. I listened to it again this morning just to remind myself. It was a beautiful speech. France was falling to the Nazis. Things were going really poorly in the war against the Nazis. Churchill had been Prime Minister for 9 days now. He went on the radio and he delivered a 10-minute speech that finished with the following words. Today is Trinity Sunday. Centuries ago, words were written to be a call and a spur to the faithful servants of truth and justice. Arm yourselves and be ye men of valor. This is called Churchill's Be Ye Men of Valor speech. And be in readiness for the conflict, for it is better for us to perish in battle than to look upon the outrage of our nation and our altar. As the will of God is in heaven, even so let it be. We have to go to battle. We have to fight. Some of us are going to die, but it's better for some of us to die in battle than to look at the outrage that is being done to our nation and to our altar. What's he talking about? Our altar? But as the will of God is in heaven, even so let it be. God will decide which ones of us are going to survive and which ones of us are not going to survive. Winston Churchill was not a particularly religious person. I saw one text that referred to him as being a kind of conforming Anglican, which I think is a term like the term social orthodox, somebody who like practices Orthodox Judaism but doesn't believe in it all that much. But so he wasn't the most religious person, but he knew, he was an extremely educated person, and he is quoting, I'm sure all of you were able to guess, why did I jump here to Winston Churchill? It's because he's quoting the Book of Maccabees. He's quoting a speech that Judah Maccabee gave to the fighters who were going to fight. And you can see here that it's in 1 Maccabees chapter 3. That's what Judah Maccabee said there. I assume that a lot of Christians who were listening to this speech actually understood that when he said the words that were written to be a call and a spur to the faithful servants of truth and justice, they recognized this. And of course, why is it talking about our altar? Because that was the issue for Judah Maccabee back in the 2nd century BCE, the fact that the altar had been timu et hechalecha, that the enemy had defiled the sanctuary, and Winston Churchill cites a text that is meaningful to people. I kind of think to myself, there were a lot of Jews who were fighting in the British Army in 1940. I wonder how many of them recognized the text that Churchill was citing there. But I think the educated Christians may have recognized it because it was part of their Bible. And another proof that discussions of the Maccabees were very very common in Christian circles. The first Crusader king, when the Crusaders captured Jerusalem at the end of the 11th century, they appointed a person named Baldwin as King Baldwin the First of Jerusalem, and on his gravestone it says, King Baldwin, a second Judas Maccabeus, the hope of his country, the strength of his church, the pride of both, feared by all, to whom gifts were brought by the tribes of Kedar and Egypt, Dan and man-slaying Damascus, is enclosed, alas, in this narrow tomb. And you can find this inscription. This inscription was found here in Jerusalem, the place where King Baldwin was buried, and he is compared to Judas Maccabeus, to Yehudah Maccabee. When you consider that in rabbinic literature, in classical rabbinic literature, the name Yehudah Maccabee does not appear at all. You can't find it in the Mishnah and the Talmud and in the oldest Midrashim. But just to give some credit where credit is due, I learned of these two sources from my friend Professor Danny Schwartz, who was spoken before for Torah Motion, and who has talked about the books of the Maccabees for Torah Motion, and who also was interested in this question of why are the Christians so interested in the in the Book of Maccabees and in the story of the Maccabees. On the other hand, another person I was speaking to recently, my daughter Chana Lakshanbab, who was also spoken for Torah in Motion on occasion when I was talking about the topic with her, she said to me, "Abba, look up the word Maccabee in Hebrew Google. Just write, go, you could, any of you want to try this, you just write the word Maccabee or Maccabim in Hebrew Google. And what do you get when you write Maccabee or Maccabim in Hebrew Google? You get beer, because there's a Maccabi beer. You get a Kupat Cholim, an HMO, a health maintenance organization called Maccabi. And you get various football and soccer teams. You don't find anything about the Maccabees. But if you write Maccabi in English, in English Google, you get the Maccabi. So that kind of shows the difference between the ways Jews... still today, there's a difference between the relationship to the books of the Maccabees. I'll admit that I never read. I didn't have a terrible Jewish education. I went to some fine Jewish schools in Toronto and in Jerusalem, and I never opened the Book of Maccabees until a professor of mine at Brandeis University told me that it was required reading for a course in historiography and the art of writing history. Professor Benjamin Rabid told me that I had to read the Book of Maccabees, and that was the first time that I opened these books. Just to make it clear, different Christian groups have different attitudes to the books of the Maccabees. For the Catholics, it is part of the Bible. It's part of the Old Testament. For the Eastern Orthodox Church, yes, it is part of the Bible. The Protestants disagree. Some of them say it's part of the Bible. Some of them say that it's not. Martin Luther was not the biggest fan of the Book of the Maccabees for reasons that are there's no reason to go into here. They're not relevant to what we will be discussing today. So first of all, the Christians have a different attitude to Mikan Va'elach. So if we said that Jews didn't make the Book of Maccabees part of their Bible because there was like a cutoff point that from this historical point on, there are no more books of the Bible. Well, certainly that isn't what Christianity felt. Christianity felt that there were biblical books that were written well after the Book of the Maccabees. And so the Book of Maccabees helps in Christian circles to have a kind of continuity of holy books, a continuity of revelation that is going on from the earliest books of the Hebrew Bible, from Genesis all the way through to the Book of Revelation at the end of at the end of the New Testament. So having biblical books that were written in the second century BCE, makes sense from a Christian perspective. However, there are a lot of reasons why, if I were setting up Christianity, I would be thinking long and hard if I really wanted the Book of Maccabees to be part of my Bible. Okay, first of all, there is no book that I know before it's from the first millennium or second millennium BCE, including biblical books that are part of the Tanakh, that talks so much about the importance of circumcision. And right from the beginning of the Book of Maccabees, the focus is on circumcision. In those days, there appeared in Israel transgressors of the law who seduced many, saying, "Let us go and make a covenant with the Gentiles all around us. Since we separated from them, many evils have come upon us." Thereupon, they built a gymnasium in Jerusalem. According to the Gentile custom, they disguised their circumcision and they abandoned the Holy Covenant. This seems to be a reference to a procedure that the rabbis of the Mishnah and Talmud called Molshech Ba'orlato, a procedure to reverse circumcision, which was complicated and I understand very painful, but people went through this a procedure to try to show that they weren't circumcised, even though they had been circumcised. They allied themselves with the Gentiles and they sold themselves to wrongdoing. And in the continuation of that chapter, the bad guys in the Book of Maccabees, mothers who had allowed their babies to be circumcised were put to death in accordance with the king's decree. Their babies were hung around their necks, and their families and those who had circumcised them were put to death. So this was like the center of the conflict is should Jews be getting circumcised or should they not be getting circumcised? More discussions in the Book of Maccabees of what the Book of Maccabees is saying is like the center of the conflict between the Maccabees and their opponents. But many in Israel were determined and resolved in their hearts not to eat anything unclean. They preferred to die rather than to be defiled with food or to profane the Holy Covenant. To profane the Holy Covenant, I presume, means lechalel brit kodesh, to refrain from circumcision or to reverse circumcision. So eating kosher And circumcising, according to the book of Maccabees, is the center of the conflict. And they did die for this value of defending circumcision and defending the rules of kashrut. And here we have in chapter 2 of 1 Maccabees, all those who were fleeing from the persecutions joined them, Matityahu and his faction, and supported them. They gathered an army, and they struck down sinners in their wrath and the lawless in their anger, and the survivors fled to the Gentiles for safety. So this text is, I'm sure that most or all of you know this, that while the Seleucid Greeks were a force in the conflict that was going on in the Hanukkah story, the Hanukkah story was mostly a conflict between pious Jews and Jews who wished to become like the Gentiles, as we saw from the quotation from 1 Maccabees a couple of slides ago. Matityahu and his friends went about and tore down the pagan altars, and they also forcibly circumcised any uncircumcised boys whom they found in the territory of Israel. So circumcision was so important that they went around checking, and when they found that there were that there were kids who hadn't been circumcised in Eretz Yisrael, they went and they forcibly circumcised them. So that's what the book of Maccabees is about. On the other hand, when you open up the New Testament, you see an attitude that seems to be totally different from what we just read in the book of Maccabees. The clearest statement about this is in Paul's epistle or letter to the Galatians, which was written, you know, not that many years after the story of the Maccabees, letter to the Galatians. The Galatians are not, for those of you Yiddish speakers, they are not the Galicianers. This is not Galicia that we were talking about. We were talking about Galatia, which was a Roman province in modern-day Turkey, which extended basically from the Black Sea to the Mediterranean. Apparently, Paul, who is often seen as being the person who spread Christianity, he had taken one trip to Galatia, and he had converted the people in Galatia, presumably various pagans in Galatia. He had converted them to whatever it was that he was calling his religion. It wasn't clear in the year 50 what Paul would have been calling this religion. Would he have been calling it Christianity? I don't really think so. Would he have been calling it Messianic Judaism, fulfilled Judaism, something like that? He had come there and he set up a congregation there of people who believed in Jesus in a few years after after Jesus was crucified. Later on, he wrote them a letter because he heard stories about what was happening back in Galatia after he left. And what was happening? He writes to them, "I am astonished that you are so quickly deserting the one who called you to live in the grace of Christ and are turning to a different gospel. You know, I taught you how to be a good disciple of Jesus, and you're doing it differently," which is really no gospel at all, what you're listening to. "Evidently, some people are throwing you into confusion and are trying to pervert the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach a gospel other than the one that we preach to you, let them be under God's curse. As we have already said, so now I say again, if anybody is preaching to you a gospel other than what you accepted, let them be under God's curse." He's angry. Somebody came and told them, if you really want to be part of this religion that Paul told you about, you have to do it a different way than Paul told you to do it. And as we read further in Galatians, we find out what the big difference is between what Paul had taught them in Galatia and what they were doing there in Galatia. Because, he says, all who rely on the works of the law are under a curse, as it is written, quoting, or probably slightly misquoting, the book of Deuteronomy. Cursed is everyone who does not continue to do everything written in the book of the law. The word everything isn't there in the Hebrew. That's the verses, Arur asher lo yakim et divrei Torah hazot. And Paul quoted it as if it says that kol divrei ha-Torah hazot. So he's saying to them, if you want to follow the law, then you will be under a curse. Mark my words, I, Paul, tell you, if you let yourselves be circumcised, Christ will be of no value to you at all. And so that's it. When you read through Galatians, finally you get to what is really bothering him is some of the people whom Paul had converted to this religion of his, this messianic Judaism of his, had decided that they should be circumcised. And Paul is very angry about this. He says, again, I declare to every man who lets himself be circumcised that he is obligated to obey the whole law. You were running a good race. You know, when I came there and taught you, you were doing it the right way. Who caught in on you to keep you from obeying the truth? And as for those agitators, those people who are telling you that you should be doing Brit Milah, that you should be doing circumcision, I wish they would go the whole way and emasculate themselves. In other translations, it says, I hope that the knife slips. You know, he's so angry that people are doing this genital surgery that he hopes that they will cut off more than they were trying to cut off. So at least in Paul's understanding, which became the dominant position in Christianity, apparently there were people who disagreed with him in the year 50, but it became the dominant position in Christianity. Circumcision is not something that is positive. On the other hand, you look at Matityahu on his deathbed in 1 Maccabees chapter 2. The days drew near for Matityahu to die, and he said to his sons, arrogance and scorn have now become strong. It's a time of ruin and furious anger. Now, my children, show zeal for the law and give your lives for the covenant of our ancestors. And he goes on, I'm going to skip down to verse 58. Elijah, because of his great zeal for the law, was taken up into heaven. Verse 64, my children, be courageous and grow strong in the law, for by it you will gain honor. So, you know, I often try to think about what it's like for a Christian to see this book as part of his or her Bible when this is a book that is really dedicated to shmirat mitzvot, to zeal for the law, and that is zeal for the law is not what Paul is teaching, and that's not what Christianity is teaching, and it's a book about circumcision, and that's not what Christianity is advocating. I found one contemporary Christian writer who puts it like this. I'd like to make one important point about these martyrs, the fact that they live before our Lord. We're venerating, many Christians, as we will see in the continuation, many Christians venerate the martyrs of the Maccabees, but wait a second, they weren't Christians because they lived before Jesus. So how come we're venerating these people when they weren't Christians? Further, they were killed because they showed their devotion to the law of Moses by refusing to eat pork and by insisting on circumcision. And the vast majority of Christians consider that there was no prohibition upon there, that is, the Christians eating pork. So how could Christians venerate people who weren't even Christians and had died for a principle which we don't even hold, which we don't even believe in? So here, found this Christian writer who's saying precisely the question that I'm trying to pose here, how did this happen? Why do so many Christians venerate the Maccabees? Nevertheless, despite all this evidence, it seems to be that it is because of the centrality of the value of martyrdom in the books of the Maccabees and in early Christianity, and in Christianity for many years following the founding of Christianity. And the books of the Maccabees are I argue, and I think I argued in a previous year in Torah in Motion talk at this time of year, that the books of the Maccabees are the first books that make the idea of martyrdom central. A part of the king's army was spread out on the high hills, and some troops were on the plain, and they advanced steadily and in good order. I'll just skip a couple lines now. Eleazar, called Avaran, saw that one of the animals was equipped with royal armor. It was taller than all the others, and he supposed that the king was on it. So he gave his life to save his people and to win for himself an everlasting name. He stabbed that elephant. The elephant fell on him. He died, and he died a martyr's death. This is the first kind of text that you can find, a Jewish text like this, that is focusing on martyrdom, that is telling stories about people who were really willing to die and did die for their religious principles. We have the story that told in the Second Maccabees of an old man who refuses to eat pork, and he died a horrible death because they were trying to force him to eat pork. In the second paragraph here, as he died a horrible death, he groaned aloud and said, "It is clear to the Lord in his holy knowledge that though I might have been saved from death, I am enduring terrible sufferings in my body and under this beating, but in my soul, I am glad to suffer these things because I fear him." Somebody who says, this is the right thing to do, to die the death of a martyr. And a few years ago, not sure how many years ago, I talked a little bit about this text from Fourth Maccabees, which is not actually part of Christian Bibles. There are four books that are called the Books of the Maccabees, and only the first two are a part of Christian Bibles. But this book also tells the stories of martyrdom, and we see here this famous speech that the woman, who is sometimes referred to as Hannah, but not in these oldest books, gave to her sons before they gave up their lives so that they would die the deaths of martyrs and not worship idols. And this is the speech that she gave. She talked to her sons about their father. "A happy man was he, your father, who lived out his life with good children and did not have the grief of bereavement. While he, your father, was still with you, he taught you the law and the prophets. He read to you about Abel being slain by Cain, about Isaac who was offered as a burnt offering, about Joseph in prison. He told you of the zeal of Pinchas, and he taught you about Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael in the fire. He praised Daniel in the den of the lions, and he blessed them, and he reminded you of the scripture of Isaiah, which says, 'Even though you go through the fire, the flame shall not consume you.'" And the interesting thing about this text is that she's telling her sons, who are about to be martyrs, that they should become martyrs, and she's citing stories from the Tanakh, from the Hebrew Bible, and none of them is a story of martyrdom. Some of them are stories of near martyrdom, of being saved from martyrdom, but none of them is a story of martyrdom. And that's when you're trying to create a religion where martyrdom is at the center of the religion, where the founder of the religion was martyred, and when many of the earliest Christians also found themselves being martyred, it was useful to have a text that talked about martyrdom. And from that perspective, I sort of understand how the first and second Maccabees ended up being part of the Christian Bible. I found in my research for this talk that the Eastern Orthodox Church actually has a day. You know, the various churches have days that are dedicated to various holy people, various saints. In the Eastern Orthodox Church, there is a day that commemorates the seven holy Maccabean martyrs, and they're named here. I'm not sure where these names came from. Chavim, Antonin, Guria, Elazar, Yusuban, Chadim, or Chalim in other versions, and Marcellus, and their mother, Solomonia, and their teacher, Elazar. So there's a day in the Eastern Orthodox Church of commemorating these martyrs. And I found out that it is commemorated on August the 1st. My wife and I got married on August the 1st. When we got married, we did not know that we were getting married on the day that is dedicated to the mother and her seven children who died the death of martyrs. And we have here the story being told here about the bravery of the you look at the last three lines here. Bravery was likewise shown by the disciples of Saint Eleazar, the seven Maccabean brothers, and their mother Solomonia. They were brought to trial on Antioch by the emperor Antiochus Epiphanes, and they fearlessly acknowledged themselves as followers of the true God, and they refused to offer sacrifice to the pagan God. And they tells the story of the excruciating deaths of all of them, and the mother was not willing to try to dissuade her youngest son from being martyred. The martyr act of the holy seven Maccabean brothers inspired Judas Maccabee, and he led the revolt against Antiochus Epiphanes with the help of God, gaining the victory and then purifying the Jerusalem Temple of Idols. All these events are related in the book of 2 Maccabees, which is included within the Bible. And sermons of laudation to the holy Maccabean martyrs were offered by various fathers of the church: Cyprian, Ambrose, Gregory, and John Chrysostomus, people who are venerated in the Eastern Orthodox Church. And I will just mention that as I was preparing this talk, I bumped into a friendly Muslim website. I know that it's friendly because there's an op-ed there that like quotes at length from an article that I wrote. And then it says here, in talking about martyrdom, those Jews who militantly resisted the pressure to conform to the majority culture were Muslims. Really? They were Muslims. Because what does that mean? A Muslim is the Arabic word for faithful followers of God's will. And their dedication eventually led to religious freedom and national independence for the oppressed Jews living in the land of Israel. So everybody's claiming the Maccabees. The Christians are claiming the Maccabees as heroes, as role models for all good Christians, and even Muslims, even though you know the books of the Maccabees are certainly not part of the Quran, because of the centrality of the value of martyrdom, the book of Maccabees achieved a level of a surprising level of popularity, and it's interesting to note that that did not happen in Jewish history, at least not until the 20th or the 21st century. That people were not reading these books, were not studying these books, and the holiday, as we know from our liturgy about Hanukkah, is not a holiday about martyrdom. It's a holiday about brave people who fought and defended Judaism and has stood up for Judaism. But the emphasis on martyrdom that is so crucial in the books of Maccabees, and that is so crucial for the Christians who venerate the book of Maccabees, and even for the few Muslims that I bumped into who find the message of the book of Maccabees so timely and meaningful for them, that isn't a phenomenon that happened in Jewish circles. I see that the chat box is very full. I'll try to give you some fast answers. Shoshana says, yes, we do venerate the 10 martyrs. You are right, but Hanukkah did not turn into that. We don't have a book that venerates martyrs. In the liturgy, we have prayers that venerate martyrs. Do I attribute traditional Judaism's ignoring the Book of Maccabees to the Gemara's general negative opinion of the Maccabean dynasty and the emphasizing of the miracle of the oil over the military victory? Certainly could be could be true. Yes. Okay. Or the rabbi historians say that Paul was actually a plant by Sanhedrin. Yes, there was a Jewish legend in the medieval times that Paul was actually sent to to separate Christianity from Judaism for the sake of Judaism. Yes, there's no historical basis for that claim. Is there any relationship between the closing of the Bible and the idea that the era of prophecy had ended? Marty Crossell asks. Yes, a one-to-one relationship between those two ideas, Marty. That because the era of prophecy was over, that is why the Bible is closed. Yes, and Shoshana notes that actually there are Christians who, more and more Christians who are going back to Old Testament things, including not mixing milk and meat and performing circumcision. I don't know how much that is happening. There's always been a phenomenon like this of Christians who observe a certain amount of Jewish law, and they can be noticed because of the incongruousness of it. I'm not certain that it's increasing now, but it is possible that it is increasing now. Gershon Hepner says, ironically, the Crusader King, King Baldwin, foreshadows Prime Minister Stanley Baldwin, who helped to generate the Balfour Declaration. Thank you very much for that, Gershon. Yes. In modern French, Mac Andy says Maccabee is slang for a cadaver. Who knew? Thank you for telling me that. Do we have an ancient version of the Book of Maccabees in Aramaic or Hebrew? We do not have the Hebrew. Scholars are convinced that the first Book of Maccabees was written in Hebrew, and we do not have the Hebrew original of the book. There are a few quotations here and there, but because Jews didn't hold on to it, the Greek translation of it was the one that survived. Okay. And it seems the rest of the comment, most of the rest of the comments here are about Rambam and the menorah. And I thank you all. Have I've got a minute over. Pardon
Okay,
me, Rabbi
Moshe.
Kelman.
Okay,
Moshe,
what?
can you just say something about Megillat Antiochus? Why wasn't
Yes.
that included?
He has got 18 seconds.
Oh, you want me to say something about
Yes.
Antiochus? No, I'm 18 seconds. I can't do it justice. Sorry.
Danish Berber has an article on Megillat Antiochus in his
Okay.
sefer on the, his one whole volume of Minhag Yisrael is dedicated to Hanukkah. So there is an article there, but we'll have to leave Megillat Antiochus for another time because it is
Great.
11:17. So 2 minutes, that's like the 2 minute warning. We have passed that. So always a pleasure, Dr. Lakshin. Thank you. And the Hanukkah summit.